From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, a Republican strategist shares how the GOP is courting Wisconsin. Then we'll tell you about a scholarship that helps Milwaukee students attend historically black colleges and universities.
Receiving a scholarship, it really means a lot to me because HBCUs are, for me, very expensive. So then being able to counteract that financial piece has been really big for the burden of financial stress that's on my family.
Plus, we'll have the latest episode of Live at Lake Effect featuring the Cactus Blossoms, made up of brothers Jack Torrey and Paige Burkham.
We don't really set out to write together, but sometimes there's just something that isn't quite finished yet, and the other person has the right idea for it, and that kind of happens musically, too.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Today, we'll look back on a time when Milwaukee hosted the Great Circus Parade and the fanfare that came along with it. But we'll start with this. The Republican National Convention is just a couple weeks away. It's going to bring a national and international spotlight to Milwaukee. But there are Wisconsin Republicans here all year round, mobilizing for this important election season. One of those people is Bill McCaution, a GOP political strategist. He joins WUWM's Mayon Silver to discuss how they're trying to sway the voters in the presidential race.
Bill, I guess the first thing we wanted to talk to you about is the nominee, former President Trump. So this is what you said in August of 2023 about the idea of Trump being the nominee. You said, I think it's problematic. You know, I'm not supporting his reelection. I voted for him two times. I don't think he sells well in the suburbs. I don't think he's added to his coalition. And then you talked about him losing in Wisconsin and the election being reviewed, and that elections are about the future, not the past. Where are you at right now on Trump?
Well, I voted for him in the primary in April, and I'm intending to vote for him in November. I mean, the reality is he cleared a pretty formidable field that included current Governor Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley were really strong competition, and he dispensed with both of them fairly easily. So clearly the base thought differently than I did a year ago, and so now I'm going to support the nominee.
And what do you think? You wanted somebody who's positive, forward-looking, who has an agenda for the future. You also wanted someone who was more conservative, younger, who would serve two terms. Where's your head at on that now?
Hasn't changed. I still want Trump to be positive, proactive, forward-looking. And he's starting to do that on the campaign trail. In Nevada a week ago, he said he would eliminate tax on tips. Well, that was really a smart move, and it impacts people in the service industry who make the least. So I think that was smart politics. When he was on Capitol Hill, he talked about potentially eliminating the federal income tax. I think that's positive. So as our nominee, he's the one that's going to control the Republican agenda. I think for a look to the future, who he picks to be the running mate, I still think is going to be important, particularly in the state of Wisconsin. You want somebody that can sell well in the suburbs. He added Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin to the list of potential VP candidates, and I think that was smart. Youngkin, it appears the race is tied between Biden and Trump in Virginia. I think it's really down to three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. But if Virginia's in play, then Trump doesn't need to win Wisconsin as badly. So I think it was smart of him to add Youngkin. I don't know if that'll ultimately be his final pick, but you want to pick somebody who adds to the ticket and potentially puts a different demographic or a different state in play.
What about his comments that Milwaukee is a horrible city? That's not very positive.
Well, I don't think that that's actually what he said. None of the congressmen from Wisconsin who were in the meetings say that's what he said. They thought he was talking about crime or election integrity. The president, the former president, was asked that directly, and he said that isn't what he said. He was talking about crime and election integrity. I think it's important that he remain disciplined for the final 150-plus days of the race and be precise in his language so that he doesn't get one of these gotchas. We've seen this before with Trump, where something that he was believed to have said isn't actually what it's he said, and sometimes it takes some time for the truth to come out, but I'll take him at his word. He said he didn't say it. I love Milwaukee. I can't wait for 50,000 Republicans from around the country to come and see our biggest city, and I think there's a lot to offer.
Just as a side note, he also says things like immigrants are poisoning the blood of this country or animals, things like that. He can have very sharp and what some call sometimes racist language. How do you think that plays in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it motivates some of the voters on the right. I think it gets attention of people who may be in the middle. I think there's another way to say that. Clearly, the border is one of the top three issues on all national polls. I think that's a significant advantage for Trump over Biden. The economy is also one of the top two issues. Again, I think that's an advantage for Trump over Biden. So the issue matrix is shaping up in his favor. Foreign affairs would be a third major item. President Biden sort of stumbled on the national stage, or the international stage, to get the G7, where he sort of wandered off. So I think there's plenty to talk about for Trump. There's a clear comparison, Mayan, for the first time in any of our lifetimes, first time in 134 years where we have a former president running against a sitting president. It's only happened one other time in history. So in this particular election, voters can actually compare what they remember about the Trump administration versus what they see from the Biden administration. And I think that's a comparison that works pretty well for Trump.
You've talked to me in the past about how Republicans have slipped since 2020 with suburban folks, suburban women, and also young voters. I'm not sure if you were talking about young suburban voters or just young voters and just young voters in
general.
Young
voters in general.
And suburban women. There are a few entities in Wisconsin right now that are working on the right. There's the Wisconsin GOP. There's Turning Point Action. You know, there's the county parties.
Americans for Prosperity.
How do you think that all those organizations are working in concert right now? Are there any weak links?
Well, I'm hoping that they're focused on the counties that really move the needle here in the state of Wisconsin. There's about 10 counties that represent about 50% of the vote statewide. That's where they ought to concentrate the majority of their resources. Not to say that the other 62 counties aren't important, because they are. But the race really turns on about 10 counties here in the state, and it's important for the outside groups to understand that, so they're maximizing and leveraging their resources to the greatest extent possible. Republicans will be outspent here. From the top of the ticket to the legislative seats, Democrats here over the past few cycles have had significantly more financial resources than Republicans have, and so we're going to have to work harder.
Do you think that the emphasis right now among Republicans is on turnout or persuasion or both? Where's the emphasis?
It'll be both. Yeah, we got to make sure we know who our voters are. We know who the voters for Trump were in 16. We lost some of those in 20. We got to get those back for sure, and hopefully add to that, right? And so it's all about ID and turnout, I think, for both sides.
And how much is the Republican Party taking advantage of this schism in the Democratic Party over Gaza and what's happening in the Middle East?
I don't know that we're taking advantage of it yet, but it is a tactic that's been discussed about, you know, how and where to use that against Democrats, probably on campuses in late October, early November. So we'll see how that plays out. But right now, we're just focused on our own house, not theirs.
So, Bill, we had some voter tape that we wanted to play for you. This is Jennifer Robers in Ozaukee County, a suburban mom, and this is what she had to say.
So I consider myself to be an independent, very much so. I'll vote for whoever is going to show me that they are going to do things to benefit myself, my family, my community especially, in practical ways, like on the ground practical ways, not pie in the sky kinds of things. I consider myself to be socially liberal, but fiscally conservative, as many people in Wisconsin are. We want to know how our bills are going to get paid and how people who have really great plans are going to pay for those. So I plan to vote for the candidates who are being positive, who are going to show me that they're going to support the people that I care about and who are going to improve my community.
And then she had this to say about voter outreach.
Well, you know, a lot of what I hear on the news is negative. I see negative attack ads constantly. And that really turns me off. And it turns off everyone I know, regardless of what their leanings are. Nobody wants to see that garbage. And they're spending millions and millions of dollars on that when they could be doing positive things with it. And that I don't like at all.
So, Bill, what will the Trump campaign and Turning Point and the Wisconsin GOP specifically be doing about what that voter is saying?
I think she raises some really good points. You know, the economy is front and center for everybody. And Trump has announced a couple bold proposals, one to eliminate taxes on tipped tips, which impacts the entire service industry. That's nationwide. That isn't just Nevada, which is big in service. Wisconsin's pretty big in the service industry here, too, because of our, tourism is one of our three pillars of our economy. So it's a big deal here, too. And I think it'll play in all 50 states. Reducing or ultimately trying to eliminate the federal income tax. Well, okay, that sounds good, but how are you going to get there? And that was her question. I think we're going to need a little more meat on the bones, but I think he was smart to talk about things he wants to get done if he gets a second term. And so I do agree with her that people are looking for positive. Politics is way too toxic these days and has been for some time. That's not going to be eliminated in this cycle. There'll still be some negativity because negativity works. But I think at the end of the day, that if you want to get those undecided voters, you're going to have to paint a positive vision.
This voter also talked about being part of the sandwich generation. She's 47 years old. Her parents are aging and she has kids and she needs to take care of both. And the older generations are concerned about potential threats to Social Security, to Medicare. You know, for kids, it's tough to find childcare that's affordable. What do you say to her about that?
Well, Trump was clear about this in 2016, and he's still clear about it today. He's not going to change Medicare or Social Security. If he wins, those will not change. So I think the Democrats have effectively used that against Republicans for the last 50 years. They can't use it against Trump. So I think he's in pretty good shape as it relates to the senior generation. He was the first one that actually did the $35 a month insulin. I mean, all the Biden administration's taking credit for that now, but that was a proposal under Trump first. So I think he's done what he can do as it relates to them. On the child care issue, there's work to be done at the state level, the local level, the federal level. And a lot of two-income earners have to make a choice now. You know, can they afford to work and pay for that child care? And we don't want to be in a situation like that.
You know, in 2016, Trump didn't have the infrastructure that the Democrats had, but he still won. But right now in Wisconsin, Democrats have 44 organizational offices around the state. They outraised Republicans 15-1 in the first quarter in the state. They, in their federal coffers, they have like 3.5-1 in terms of finances. And money equals messaging equals mission. How are Republicans responding to this?
Well, since the Trump trial ended, he's raised more than $400 million. And that continues, including in very blue states like California, where he raised over $30 million alone. So the hope is a significant amount of resources come to Wisconsin to build those field staffs, to open those offices across the state, to complement what's already going on with Turning Point or Americans for Prosperity, who have boots on the ground. Both of those organizations have dozens and dozens of paid people on the ground today in the state of Wisconsin. But we're going to need more. We're going to need those Trump resources to come here to help us on the ground to make sure that not only are we IDing our voters, but getting them to the polls.
There were like 12% of Haley supporters in the primary of all the Republican voters. Are you seeing that they're coming around, or what are you seeing there?
So I still think she's on the short list for VP, and I think that Trump wins walking away if he picks her. I don't know that she'll get it, but I wouldn't rule her out. And I know if he does win, she's going to have some role, but she's performed very well even after she withdrew from the race. There were multiple states where she got more than 20% of the vote long after she got out of the race. So she's got a following for sure, and she's got a voice.
Bill McCaution is a Wisconsin Republican political strategist. He spoke with WUWM's Mayon Silver. You can help shape our coverage of the RNC by filling out our election survey. You can find a link to that at WUWM.com. What you tell us will help inform the stories that you hear on Lake Effect and WUWM. In about 15 minutes, we'll learn about the history of circuses in Wisconsin, from the Ringling Brothers to the great circus parade tradition here in Milwaukee. But first, we'll speak to a recent Milwaukee grad who received a scholarship that will help her attend a historically black college or university this fall. That's coming up on Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Northwestern Mutual is helping to send Milwaukee students to historically black colleges and universities through its hometown HBCU Connection Scholarship. This scholarship provides recipients the support needed to succeed professionally and personally. In addition to grants, students will be mentored by company leaders, they'll be eligible for paid internships before their junior and senior year, and will be considered for employment after graduation. One of the scholarship's recipients is 18-year-old Carrington Parrish, a graduate of Rufus King High School. WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell speaks with her about receiving the scholarship.
Let's talk more about the journey that brought you here right now. Applying for this scholarship to choosing your major and your minor, and why Spelman?
So I applied for this scholarship before I even decided on what school I was going to. So really, what order you put all those questions in, like, it really does align with my journey. I'm a part of this program called Graduation Plus through the Boys and Girls Club, and that really exposed me to this scholarship, as well as having friends last year win it. So I saw all the opportunities that they were given, just like the internships that they will be getting in the next few years, and also just all the support that they were giving to my friends and just other kids like in the community that were going to HBCUs. Then from there, like, I've always known that I've wanted to go to HBCU. So it was like a no-brainer really applying to it, because both of my parents went to HBCUs and my older brother as well goes to HBCU. So just having the exposure of HBCUs has been really instrumental in my life. Just going to my dad's homecoming in the last few years and just seeing all the fun he had and just seeing all the connections that he's built and maintained throughout his years was so special to me. My dad went to Jackson State in Mississippi, and my mom went to Tougaloo College, which is also in Mississippi. So that's kind of like also how they met. And I was like, it's kind of like built our family kind of. And also my brother, he goes to Grambling State and he plays on the basketball team there. And I think it might've been history for them being an HBCU going to March Madness. So that was really instrumental as well. And just to seeing like all the opportunities that HBCUs really can afford to you. Picking my school, it was kind of tough because I feel like all HBCUs have something to give. But for me, my top list was Howard, Spelman, and Xavier University of Louisiana. So all those schools have super great majors for what I want to do, which is become a doctor in the future. Just through visiting and seeing all the different campuses and seeing all they have to offer really kind of narrowed down my list. And so I was really torn between Howard and Spelman because those are the top HBCUs to me. And they have such great community and such great areas they're in. And for the GPA I maintained throughout high school, I knew that it was going to be attainable to go to both of those schools. So it was so difficult choosing between Howard or Spelman. And it's kind of crazy for me because throughout my sophomore year, junior year, and then like beginning of my senior year, I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm going to go to Howard. Like, I just love Howard so much, I'm going to go. And when it came down to it and I visited Spelman and when I got in, just the overwhelming like amount of love and sisterhood that I received, like just from posting my video of me getting accepted, there were so, so many women that reached out to me. And so I was like, this is something I've never felt before because I never had sisters. So I was like, wow, this is so special. And it was a really unique experience that I feel like I couldn't live without. And I know that they have everything I need here. So that's really how I ended up choosing Spelman. Of course, with them being the number one HBCU, I was like, I really couldn't pass this up really. And my major, as I said before, I want to become a physician. So health science on a pre-med track is the perfect major for me because it really pinpoints all the things I need to know before getting into medical school. And also the comparative women's studies piece is because I want to become an OBGYN. And so becoming OBGYN, I really want to learn more about women and learn more about our history. It's just kind of an interesting topic to me because I'm a woman, of course, and I just love to learn about women in like a broader sense, because in history, we don't really learn much about women. And usually we see them on like the back burner and history books and things like that. But it's also great to know that we're instrumental in all of history and Black women specifically.
We definitely need more Black women OBGYNs because of the disparities that Black women face in the healthcare field. So with your career as a physician, do you see yourself returning to Milwaukee?
Yeah, so that's definitely a big part of my career goals is I don't know if exactly to like live forever or like, you know, I just love my community so much. I definitely want to give back to my community. Mm-hmm. And a part of like my career goals, because of the maternal fetal mortality rate and like you said, disparities within urban communities and Black communities specifically, I definitely want to open up my own private practice in Milwaukee just to give back to the community that poured so much into me, and especially give back to Black women and educate them on all the things that I didn't know before I became, well, I become a physician in the future, and just giving back totally with information and just low cost care. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that I'm doing that. And I also want to like, it's kind of a big dream, but I think I can do it, but have multiple offices like throughout low income areas throughout the United States. So I think that's one of my biggest goals. And of course, like just returning back to Milwaukee and like seeing other young girls that look like me or that want to do the same things I'm doing, because at Spelman, there's not that many girls that are from Milwaukee. And so just making sure that they know that the dream that I have is attainable for them as well.
So what sort of experiences are you looking forward to? And is there anything that you're anxious about at all?
I'm really just looking forward to the HBCU experience. Like, it is so dynamic and amazing, and seeing how transformative it can be and see how unique it can be for really anybody who goes through an HBCU. And so for me, I'm kind of just ready to embrace every single thing that comes with it. I'm excited for the homecomings. You know, that's going to be a great experience. And I'm excited for like just having professors and women around me that look like me and we have like-minded ideas and like-minded goals. I'm super excited for that as well. And of course, I'm excited to be in Atlanta. That's an amazing city. I love that city so much. That's also a part of why I chose Spelman. My family lives there, and I can't wait to see what Atlanta has for me.
Good that you'll have family there as well to be that support system for you. What does it mean to you to have received Northwestern Mutual's hometown HBCU Connection Scholarship?
Yeah, so receiving this scholarship, it really means a lot to me because HBCUs are, for me, very expensive. My experience of HBCUs is very expensive. So then being able to counteract that financial piece has been really big for the burden of financial stress that's like on my family right now. So that was a really big part, as well as just the support that I've experienced before I even have gotten to campus has been crazy. Like going to so many different events and meeting so many different people that care so much about me and don't really know much about me, but they know that I'm going to do great things and just believe in me is something so special. And I really appreciate them for everything they've done. And of course, like the internship part of it, it's super exciting for me as well, just to be seeing all the things that they do in the Northwestern Mutual building. Because for me, I'm just like, I thought they just did insurance. But when I was learning about so many things they do in the building and so many career paths, it's really eye-opening. And seeing that I can learn so many things, it's like business and finances and everything else that's like done there. I'm super excited for that as well, just to have the business experience.
So I guess my final question for you is, why would you say this scholarship's just mere existence is important to students in Milwaukee?
Yeah. So I feel like going to an HBCU, a lot of times like people don't know about HBCUs and they don't get as much exposure as PWIs, and just the scholarship existing totally gives exposure to all the HBCUs that me and all the other scholarship recipients are going to. It also just gives kids in the community, like, seeing that it's actually attainable to go to the HBCUs that we're all going to, and that the financial part is not the biggest burden that's going to come with college and all those other things. There's other things you can focus on, like your academics and all the things you want to do on your campus and things like that. So just this scholarship, like, being, especially in the Milwaukee area, there's a lot of kids who don't know even if they want to go to college, or even if they see themselves like doing different things with their future. And this scholarship just allows them to see that there's more things to just whatever's going on right now, that you have a future that's so bright, and that there's people that are willing to support you throughout the process. And I would tell anybody who's just like listening or wondering if they want to go to HBCU or if they want to apply to the scholarship in the fall, I totally support, and you should do it, because it's gonna be a life-changing experience, and it's definitely benefited me.
Carrington Parrish is a recent graduate of Rufus King High School and the recipient of Northwestern Mutual's Hometown HBCU Connection Scholarship. She spoke with WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter, Taryn Powell. Sixty years ago, the Great Circus Parade filled the streets of downtown Milwaukee with colorful, historic wagons, marching bands, and clowns. The parade showcased Wisconsin's history as the birthplace of many circuses, and the unique collection of wagons housed at the Circus World Museum in Baraboo. Over the years, the parade repeatedly returned to Milwaukee with a final hurrah in 2009, after a long and extremely expensive run. This might all sound like ancient history to people who've never experienced the spectacle, but as WUWM's Susan Bentz discovered, the parade's memory lives on today.
Milwaukee Public Librarians Jennifer Paul and Dan Lee are busy preparing to show off the library's Great Circus Parade collection.
The last one was 14 years ago, and that was the swan song of the circus parade. And there's a whole generation that has never grown up with a circus parade. Jen Paul is our digital projects librarian, and she thought, well, you know, since it's the 60th anniversary, let's digitize some of the materials that we have.
Lee has personal parade memories. We're standing on Wisconsin Avenue, where he and his parents watched the splendor in the 1970s.
Yeah, we would have lunch at Big Boy, and looking out the window, you could see that there were already rows of people, you know, camping out on Wisconsin Avenue waiting for the parade to start, so that the rows were about like five deep already. And then when we would finish our lunch, and then we would try to, you know, find a spot and squeeze our way in where we can actually see part of it.
We meet digital projects librarian Jennifer Paul a few blocks west on Wisconsin Avenue, inside Milwaukee's majestic Central Library. Paul pages through some of the materials donated over the years, including a box chucked full of slides from the first and second parades.
One of the slides included the wagon that contained the hippopotamus, which didn't start being pulled in the parade until 1964.
Paul says parade organizers kept meticulous records of every element of the parade. She has digitized that too. That means with a click, people can peruse the materials from the screen of their choice. Digitizing also protects posters, flyers, tickets from deteriorating.
We have an itinerary that lists descriptions of all of the different circus wagons that were in the parade.
That very first time.
And it includes like the number of horses that pulled them, colors that the wagon was painted, circuses that they came from, so just a wealth of information.
It was Lee's job to artfully fill two glass-covered display cases with memorabilia. He included something personal, a framed photo his dad had taken of Lee and his mom on the lakefront grounds where the circus wagons and animals lived over the days before and following the parade.
I wish I asked my dad why he chose to frame that photo, you know, of all the family photos that we have. You know, it was in my parents', you know, bedroom, and when my mom went into assisted living, I placed it there as a, you know, as a little memento, and it's back home now. And I figured, geez, you know, I'm setting up a display on the circus parade. I figured it'd be nice to, you know, have that in there.
for me, the photos, some of the photos have a personal connection to.
Jennifer Paul moved from Michigan after the circus parade era, but inherited photos her uncle left to her.
In the 1960s, the late 1960s, I think it was 66, 67, he had come up from Chicago to attend the circus parade.
Two of those photos are on display,
including the one with the clown and the llama. So those are really some of my favorites, just because it's a connection to my uncle who's no longer with us.
Countless people cherish memories of one or more of the 29 circus parades held in Milwaukee. Jake Ruby is one of them. He grew up on the family farm in Brookfield and has vivid memories of circus parades. Horses were his dad, Rollins' passion. Jake sat beside his father as he drove six of his cherished draft horses in the first circus parade.
Chappy Fox headed up the museum up there, and it was his plan and his idea to have a circus parade, to bring it back after all these years. And so in doing that, he did need some help on getting the horsemen.
Dozens of teams of massive horses were needed to pull the restored antique circus wagons.
Chappy knew his wagons, he knew the circus history, but as far as putting the parade together, you know, obviously he had all the wagons and everything, but he needed people that could drive their horses and be safe. That's where my dad was just so vital to Chappy, and Chappy was very thankful to have him because my dad basically screened every driver and every team in the first parade. He just didn't want there to be trouble with someone with wanting to be in the parade because, you know, it was a big buildup to it, but not having the correct horses that had been around or he had been around, you know, so.
The Rubies, father and son, showed and competed with their horses throughout the Midwest. Jake says his dad knew which horsemen had the most seasoned teams.
Figuring it out the route, as far as turns, as far as the bridges being the old graded type where you can see through to the water. And things like that, you got to be aware of what you're going to do. Like for that, they laid down rubber mats so that the horses would not see through the bridge when they crossed it.
Rolland Ruby hitched up his horses for the final circus parade in 2009. He died only months later. Jake says simply,
it was the happiest time of his life when he was with his horses.
The South Milwaukee Municipal Band was among the ensembles chosen to march in the inaugural Great Circus Parade, and many of them that followed. I caught up with bass clarinetist Russ Deharsh recently when he and a much smaller and older municipal band performed at a local senior living facility.
I joined the band in 1969.
Over the years, the municipal band toured and played around the country. How does the circus parade compare?
It was a highlight in that it was like the biggest parade, and you got to be with other really big groups, and you knew it was important.
It was also hot and long, Dehar says.
We bussed down to a lakefront, and then you had to wait for the circus people to give you your uniforms, because they owned the uniforms.
For that day, they became the Wild West Band.
You wore a Wild West shirt, you wore blue jeans, you had to wear plastic chaps they provided, and then a cowboy hat and a bandana on your neck.
Then the band waited until their time had come.
Once you stepped off, you never stopped playing. So most parades, they don't run that well. You start, you stop. Not in the Swift Parade. It was big time.
Joel Kempfer says he and his young son had a once-in-a-lifetime thrill while visiting the circus grounds in the early 1990s.
We were down at Veterans Park, just him and I. My daughter wasn't with us, or my wife wasn't with us for whatever reason. Of course, we were walking around the park, and we were excited to see that the 40-horse hitch had been, you know, they had the horses all hooked up to the wagon, and so we went closer to check it out.
Someone was supposed to be getting a ride, but hadn't shown up.
And the gentleman who was driving the horses looked at my son and I and says, hey, would you like a ride? And, you know, of course, we said, sure.
Kempfer has only one regret. His son was too young to remember their lap around the grounds behind the magnificent team of horses.
This is my wig. Oh, great. And my hat.
I had the chance to meet Linda Shipman face to face. Sitting in her shaded backyard in Germantown, she pulls out the costume she wore in the circus parade.
My favorite are my shoes.
Shipman is petite, but these shoes are supersized. That's because she was a clown, Noodles the clown. She and her fellow Milwaukee Metro Clown Club members waved to the mass of humanity throughout the parade route. In July 1994, her white face, artfully made up by Shipman herself, was on the front page of the Milwaukee Journal.
One of the favorite things that I used to do in parades was I'd be walking down the street and I'd see an empty lawn chair. And I'd plunk myself down in this lawn chair and I'd go, I hear there's a parade here today. Have you seen anything, you know?
Shipman says kids loved it, but the circus parade had different rules. The
circus parade was different than other parades. Baraboo wanted clowns in the parade. They didn't want them... How can I explain that? They wanted them there for show. They wanted them there for color. They didn't want us to talk to the people.
No props, no interaction.
There were a lot of don't in that parade.
Being a circus parade clown meant getting up at 5 a.m. and being on the grounds by 6. But Shipman says, don't get it wrong.
Once you put on the makeup, you almost become a different person. And I'd do it, if I was younger, I'd do it again in a heartbeat. It was like, they'd say, oh, circus parade is back. And
each conversation with people who stood in awe from the sidelines or played a role in the parade agreed. The Great Circus Parade was a highlight in Milwaukee's cultural history. For Like Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
That piece was produced by WUWM's Susan Bentz last summer. You can find more about the Circus World Museum and the parade at WUWM.com. We'll take one more break and then return with a song and a conversation with the Cactus Blossoms for our latest Live at Lake Effect. Keep listening to Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Live at Lake Effect is our music series featuring artists performing in the Lake Effect Surf Shop in Shorewood. We brought the Lake Effects together, along with Visionary Studios, to showcase local and nationally touring musicians. Today, we have the Cactus Blossoms, made up of brothers Jack Torrey and Paige Burkham from Minneapolis. Since 2011, the American alternative country and indie folk band have played a variety of genres, highlighting their vocal harmonies throughout. Here they are performing Runaway.
All along you were a runaway. Should have known it from the start. My head once or twice had said, don't give away your heart. I believe you when you used to say that your rambling days were done. I was taken in by what could it longing for another night on the road. Have you found another fool to do anything for you? Will you ever see what you did to me? Won't get you very far. I'm not chasing any one today. Can run another mile. When we started out, didn't have a doubt I could keep up with the runaway for a while. You're just a runaway.
Thank you, thank you.
Hi, this is Audrey Nowakowski from Lake Effect, along with Milwaukee musician Trapper Shep, co-executive producer of our music series, Live at Lake Effect. Hey, Trapper, how's it going?
Audrey, it is going terrific because we have the cactus blossoms in our orbit, and we have the chance to talk with them today. It's made up of brothers Jack, Tori, and Paige. Welcome to Live at Lake Effect, brothers.
Good to be here. Hey, Trapper. Hey, Audrey.
I know a little something about this, but what are your takeaways from being in a band with your brother? How is it? How are you doing?
We're still figuring that out. We're still working on it. It's going pretty good right now. Yeah, we're used to a lot of negotiating, though, for sure. There's a lot of just imagine touring, but then imagine touring with your brother who you see eye to eye with all the time and you never have any differences at all. And
no, exactly. And
no minor disputes.
No, it's all a perfect blood harmony on and off the stage. But what I love about you two is so easy, so gentle. Your sound is, of course, a bit of a throwback to a bygone era, but quite honestly, when I see y'all sing, it is like listening to the Everly Brothers, but a modern version. And I do not mean that in the sense that it's stuck in the past, but it is such a modern take on it. And I'm curious, did you grow up listening to artists like that, or how did you begin to form your sound?
Yeah, definitely loved the Everlys and the Beatles. And I was kind of naturally drawn to that 60s kind of music. But really, I think we loved all sorts of music. And we really got into folk and country stuff. And then when we started singing together, duets just have a way of, I guess, like when you sing country or when you sing country songs with harmonies, they kind of turn out sounding a little bit like Everly's songs.
Right. If you harmonize a Hank Williams song and add a little bit more of a backbeat to it, you're kind of getting there. So in some ways, it was by accident where we got into all this other musical stuff, kind of came back to the Everlys later and realized we're playing music in this wheelhouse. And since then, you know, we've changed things, and we certainly don't feel like we need to use them as any kind of model, but we try not to, you know, stick to any pattern or formula and just follow the songs where they take us.
Yeah. And we have dabbled in a lot of different styles. You know, kind of when we were first starting out, we did some Western swingy kind of stuff and just some kind of straightforward country stuff. But it kind of changes with our band members too. You know, we've had some different folks playing with us over the years. And right now we kind of have a little bit more of some classic rock entering the sound, just drums and electric guitars and stuff. But it is interesting to see the audience shifts a little bit with, of course, with what styles of music you're making. You know, if you play Western swingy stuff, suddenly you got 10 cowboy hats in the audience. You know,
I grew up in Minneapolis. I just saw your show at the Minnesota Zoo last year, and it was so inspired. It was so easy. It was so gentle. You were all playing electric guitars, maybe even Jazz Master or two on stage. And I'm wondering if there is any sort of made in Minnesota ethos to your sound, and if you think that territory inspired you, because I know it inspired me a lot and the artists that had come from there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always cool to see other people from where you're from do interesting and wonderful things. And it can make you feel like, yeah, you can do that. You can be from Minneapolis and do whatever you want. And I think that's, you know, there's been just so much great music that people know about that's come out of this city. And there's so many great musicians that people have never heard of that are a part of the community here. And it's definitely inspiring.
As your sound has evolved, and with each new album change, right, as well, how has your songwriting, either individually or collectively, evolved?
Well, this is Paige here. Jack was doing pretty much all the songwriting when we started. I had written a couple songs that we would do, but the way the band formed was kind of around his songwriting and then me harmonizing with him and us just saying, like, let's do more of this. But, you know, over time I've started writing more over the years, and we've also just kind of brought each other our songs that aren't quite finished yet. And I don't know, just brought a different perspective to that. And we don't really set out to write together, but sometimes there's just something that isn't quite finished yet, and the other person has the right idea for it. And that kind of happens musically too. So I don't know, we just kind of bring each other what we've got and see how it comes together. We don't really have really set out to make any kind of thing together, but it just depends what we each bring to the table.
Yeah. That's what I was getting to with like the gentleness and ease of your sound, is it's got this like JJ Cale smoothness to it, yet it just sort of goes wherever it wants. And your most recent album was 2022's One Day, and I was curious if you could talk about some of those songs that you played in the surf shop for us.
Yeah, it's funny you say the JJ Cale thing, because we played that song Hey Baby off that record for you guys, and it doesn't matter, there's a million songs with the same name, but it's got a bit of a JJ style, and I realized later that he's got a song called Hey Baby which is a great song, very different, but that was a weird time. That record came together during the pandemic, and we at some point started getting together again and working on music and bringing our ideas to the table. And that was one that was exciting and really fun to record once we got a chance to. And Paige wrote one called Is It Over that I think we also did. And
then we worked on Runaway together.
Then he had another idea called Runaway that we finished together. And, you know, so that's kind of a nice little trio of my song, his song, and our song.
Yeah, and working on One Day together, like Jack said, the pandemic was still kind of in full force during that time when we were recording. So kind of as soon as we could, we started just getting together, and we couldn't get together with our whole band. So we would just kind of demo the songs together in the basement, playing drums and bass and whatever we had around. So we kind of worked out the songs that way and then brought our whole band into the picture.
With your upcoming album, Every Time I Think About You, is it a similar approach in songwriting where obviously you both get inspiration from what you go through, but there's also like kind of an ambiguous character that you tap into? Does that help you both kind of be more open to each other's additions or feedback and trying to roll out a theme that maybe presents itself down the line as you're working on new material?
Yeah, I think the theme, you know, we don't set out to write songs around a theme or to make a cinematic record where everything ties, every song ties into the next. But it just, I think it ends up happening when all the songs are kind of written in close proximity. I think these themes come out, and Every Time I Think About You was really fun to make after the last record, because the last one, we wanted to go into the studio, have plenty of time to just work with the band, record a lot of live stuff, and that just wasn't possible last time. We could only get like 3 days together in a basement. But this time we got to bring our song ideas to the band, drink coffee, hang out, jam on ideas over a couple of months, and then go into the studio and start recording the songs and know what we're doing enough to not be experimenting with the key or the rhythm and just have fun playing together. So that was a huge, huge difference with this one. And it was a lot of fun for us.
The music you played at the surf shop is very fun. So thank you, Cactus Blossoms, for being here with us. And we really appreciate y'all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody.
That was the Cactus Blossoms joining us for Live at Lake Effect. Be sure to head to WUWM.com and our YouTube page to see them performing three original songs from their album One Day in the Lake Effect Surf Shop. Their new album called Every Time I Think About You is out August 30th. Milwaukee musician Trapper Shep and myself are the executive producers of Live at Lake Effect. Sound engineering is done by WUWM's Jason Reavy. And thanks to our friends at Visionary Studios, a local advertising agency, for filming and editing this episode. New episodes of Live at Lake Effect are released monthly, and be sure to catch up on our past episodes featuring Willie Carlisle, Buffalo Nichols, The Lemon Twigs, Abby Jean, and much more. That's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of today's conversations or you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, simply download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcast to listen to all of our shows on demand. WUWM has a new politics podcast called Swing State of the Union. It explores why Wisconsin is a deeply purple state and why Wisconsin is so important in this election year. New episodes drop every Wednesday leading up to the Republican National Convention. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll explore why prisons like the Waupun Correctional Institution have a hard time hiring and retaining staff. Plus, we'll tell you about some of the best places for summer dining here in Milwaukee. That's tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.